Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show, where we help you win at the game of business and marketing. My name is Adam Homey. I'm your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to join us today. As the name says, our listeners are business creators. We have our entrepreneurs, small business owners, and local business owners. We have our marketing and business coaches. We have the folks who help others build their businesses. And on the other side of that coin, we have the do-it-yourselfers who love having your own hands on the levers as you market and grow your business. If you are one or more of the above, please take a moment, explore our episodes at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com, where we help you win at the game of business and marketing. Also, check us out on iTunes. Just do a search for Business Creators Radio Show. Every 5-star rating is greatly appreciated, helps us help more business creators just like you. We have over 120 episodes. Make sure to subscribe. Fresh content delivered automatically to your iTunes every single week. Today, we are going to get into, and I'm so excited about this because this is one of the most common things that people ask for in the discussion groups that I see and in some of the coaching and consulting I do, which is how to sell without being salesy. And part of the reason that people are looking for that sales without being salesy, also known as selling without selling, why they're looking to be able to accomplish that effectively has to do with really two things. On the one hand, they recognize that if they have not established the know, like, and trust with their prospect, that they are very unlikely to succeed in closing that deal, getting that client, and having the opportunity to be of service. Now, also, it has a lot to do with confidence, which is why today we're going to be talking about the secret to sales confidence. And to share with you on that, I have with us Phyllis Nichols of SoundAdviceSales.com. And just to tell you a little bit about Phyllis, as I said, she's the founder of Sound Advice Sales and Marketing. That's a company that helps entrepreneurs build their businesses infusing sales strategies with a daily action plan. Phyllis has a passion for sales, telling stories that inspire and empowering others to embrace their potential. She uses her expertise to help creative entrepreneurs grow revenue resources and infuse confidence and creativity to tell their marketing stories. Phyllis, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here with you today.
Great, absolutely. And the feeling is definitely mutual as far as that goes. Now, I just told people a little bit about what you're doing right now, but what we like to do is, especially for those of our listeners who haven't really had a chance to get to know you yet, just tell us a little bit about what has brought you to the intersection of your brilliance and your passion to drive you to do what you're doing today to serve our business creators.
Well, sure, I'd be happy to do that. I really do consider myself a salesperson at heart,
right.
Which is... I sometimes odd. People kind of look at me weird when I say that at times. But I started off years ago working in corporate sales in a B2B environment. And what I realized is, first of all, I really liked it, and I was really good at it. And it just kind of took off from there. One of the things I realized though early on was it was really all about connecting with people. And so that's something that I worked on the most. Obviously, knowing your products and knowing your stuff, right? Knowing whatever it is you're selling and marketing is important. But at the end of the day, the fun of it for me was being able to connect with people and also being able to be in a helpful place with them, even in the B2B environment. You know, my job was really to help my customers. Do the best for them, make the best decisions. I was selling IT products and services, and so we were just trying to make sure they were getting the right thing, they weren't overpaying, they were getting the best solutions possible, and it just kind of took off from there.
That's fantastic. Now, what we like to do here in the Business Creators Radio Show, and our listeners can hear the drumbeat in the background because they know what I'm going to ask ask next. I'm so excited over this. I can barely pronounce my own words. So here we go. Here in the Business Creators Radio Show, we provide the tools, techniques, and strategies to help entrepreneurs quickly grow their businesses. A lot of our listeners tell me they have everything they need to implement anything that we say they need to do except for time and money. This is a question we ask every expert who appears on our show. What I like is not only the variety of different answers, but also the variety of ways the question is interpreted. So how do time and money impact what you're going to share with us today?
Well, two things, really. Time, actually, I believe, is really our most precious commodity. So the best, when it comes to selling or when it comes to being effective at really anything in life, is really valuing your time and using it in the best way that you can, really approaching it as a commodity, whether in whatever fashion you can do that. But, I like to schedule things and I plan. I do my most important work first and things like that. But I think we're used to, feeling like money is our most precious commodity, but I really feel like it's time, because the days and the weeks sort of slip away and maybe projects don't get finished or we don't make the progress that we would like. When it comes to the money, I really feel like, money, you can always make more, right? So being able to just really focus on money as the result of your work and sort of has been the best sort of, it's my attitude or my approach. My work is to really help others do the best that they can and be successful, and money is sort of the byproduct of that. That's my approach with that.
That's a very interesting perspective, and thank you for sharing with that. So what I'd like to do now is, as I mentioned earlier, so many folks out there are looking for the ultimate selling without selling strategy, and I believe that it has to do with two things, as I said. Number one, it's because they recognize the importance of what we like to call the website conversion conversation, that process of building know, like, and trust. And on the other hand, it also tends to have a lot to do with confidence. So first of all, let's define our terms. What is sales confidence?
Well, sales confidence for me, there's a couple things that I want to mention. So first of all, for your listeners and for everyone who is really maybe struggling with this concept of selling or sales in general, I like to really distill it to its simplest. I feel like, we overcomplicate a lot of things, and sales is one of those things I think that becomes very complex sometimes, and it's no wonder that people go, oh, I hate it. So let's make it super simple. Selling is nothing more than making an offer and giving someone the chance to say yes to that offer.
Okay.
Okay, so as a marketer, like you and I and the people listening, I hope they find some confidence just in that description, because you know what? Your job is really to make the offer. That's your job. That's it, is making the offer. Now, you want it to be compelling, and you want it to be interesting and some other factors, but, you know, that's really your job, making offers and making the offer in whatever way that is, whether it's on your website or in person or, in writing, emails, however you do that. There's a number of ways to make offers. But that's where I want you to focus. And hopefully for a lot of people, I hope that it makes them feel a little more confident, because that's all you're doing. You're not persuading. You're not manipulating. You're not trying to do anything other than just put your offer out to the world.
That brings up a question. Why do people make it complicated? Why do we think it's so complicated?
Well, I think that because a couple of things. First of all, we're not always really good at making offers, so it's got to be more than that, right? It can't just be. It's kind of like, I like to use the analogy like with losing weight, right? Most of us know like there's some things that we can do that would help us lose weight or live in a more healthy manner, and we usually know what those things are. If I ask almost anybody, they could give me a list of 5 or 6 things that they know would be helpful. We do kind of the same thing with selling. I think we just, there's so much resistance sometimes. I think it's just even the simplest steps. It feels like it should be harder and more complicated, and it really isn't. So I really work with people in mindset too. Really, if you've got something to share with the world, at your work, your art, really the best thing that you can do for yourself and for your product or services is to make the offer. Make the offer frequently and often. the other, if you're struggling with that, you know, the other part of it obviously is just putting the offer in front of people who are the most likely to purchase. So, you know, I could randomly go up and down my street and make offers to all my neighbors, but if they don't own their business and they're not interested in sales concepts, then obviously I'm making the offer in genuine good faith, but I'm not reaching the right people, obviously. So I'm using a very obvious example. But, yeah, I just think it gets complicated. And sometimes selling is more than one place. So right with my corporate clients, my offer might have been first just to have a meeting. That was the first offer that I made, was just the opportunity to have a meeting and sit down and talk with them. Now, the second offer might have been to take it further and be able to provide them with pricing or a proposal or take a project to the next level. So, you know, there are sometimes a couple of steps, but making the offer is always just the simple, easiest. When you're feeling stuck about it, go back to that piece, because that's the piece that's always going to help.
This is already triggering a couple things here, which is fantastic. We've had other guests on the Business Creators Radio show talking about sales, which is fantastic because we like to get a lot of different points of view.
Sure.
We can learn from everybody. And one of the things that I see where we don't seem to have one correct answer, and I'm not sure there is a correct answer, so I'm looking for your perspective on this, is how many touches does it take to make a sale? How many marketing touches?
That's a great question, and the answer is probably it depends. Now, so for example, if you go to you know, a store like Costco, and they're handing out samples, you know, it might just take one touch, right? You get a sample and you try it out and you go, oh, that's really good. I want it. I put it in my cart and that's done. They've made an offer and it's done. It's a one-time thing. I would say if you're in the business world, though, and you're listening, you know, a lot of your listeners I know have small businesses or maybe even larger businesses, it's quite possible, and it depends on the complexity of the product or service that you're offering. I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5. It's not something, and it's not a repetitive, like, pounding that same offer over and over. It's a conversation. I want people to understand too. You know,
right.
I may be making an offer just like, you know, my first offer just might be like, can we have a phone call and have a conversation about this? I'd love to see if there might be a way, you know, some way that I could help you. You know, that's a first initial offer. And through that conversation, then we may decide together to take it to the next level and we have an offer to have an in-person meeting or whatever your business model looks like. So, but I hope that answered your question.
That actually gives us a lot of insights here, and I think you're right. It absolutely depends. Here's another thing that that I want to make sure that we get out there, and I want to get your thoughts on this as well. Working with our coaching consulting clients here at the Business Creators Institute, one of the things that I strongly, and I mean adamantly, tell our clients to do is, let's say you're selling information products, or let's say you have a monthly coaching program or something that somebody can sign up for, or you're doing events and people can register for the events. Now, immediately, people were thinking, oh, time to upsell. Best time to get them to say yes is when they've said yes. All that sound familiar?
Sure.
So what we tell people to do is, your first contact with that person should be, and not by autoresponder or auto dial or anything, but an actual human being composes an email sent from an actual email account, not an autoresponder, or picks up the phone and calls a person, just depending on the volume you're dealing with and whether or not it's the type of offer that really requires a lot of human communication. But one way or another, just contact them to say, hey, thanks again. Congratulations on your wise decision. You know, here are your access details again in case you need them. Let you know that I'm here if you have any questions. And that's it. You would think I was trying to sell. You'd think I was trying to sell furnaces to people in Ecuador. I mean, for goodness gracious, like, what? You're not taking an opportunity to sell?
Oh, no. I agree with you. I mean, I think that, first of all, if it's somebody that's just bought something and they may not have even had time to actually consume, like in your example, a course or part of a membership and that sort of thing, I think that reaching out is really good so that there's some acknowledgement that, hey, I know you joined, you're not just a number or a, you know, member number or whatever, right? There's a real person behind there and there's a real connection being made. I think that's genius and I think that's a win. I think rather than trying to sell there, I agree with you. What I think would really be better is over-delivering those first 30 days and making sure that person is really having a good experience, and then maybe contacting with a follow-up for, you know, maybe if there's an upsell to have some coaching or whatever might be the case in your business model, they're going to be much more receptive if it's like, hey, I see that you've, you know, used several of our modules, you've commented a couple times on the forum. I'm not, you know, if you're not seeing the best results, here's how we can help. Here's some other options to be able to help you get the most out of this program. I think things like that would be most effective. And they, again, there's an acknowledgement that this just isn't random day 30, everybody gets this email. It's there's some real logic behind it. I personally just experienced this in a course that I was taking, and, you know, I got an email from the leader of the course saying, hey, you know, I noticed this one particular part of the course you haven't checked in on, and I just wondered if that's an issue for you or if you've had any problems. If you have, please let me know. And I was kind of like, wow, that's kind of nice, right? Somebody's paying attention. I'm not just sort of this random person that, you know, is going through this curriculum. So I do agree with your philosophy. I think over-delivering in the beginning means you're going to have a customer for life, and they'll continue to buy and consume things as long as you're meeting their needs.
Yeah, I think these are all, good points. Another thing that comes up for me is I think that when we get into this whole thing about the secret to sales confidence and how things are becoming so complicated, I think things get complicated with social media because we get messages from some of the education out there about social media, about selling on social media. And I personally find that using social media platforms like LinkedIn or Facebook or even Instagram, for instance, the less
right.
you sell, and I'm using air quotes here, the less you sell, the more money you make.
Well, right. And on those kinds of, I kind of agree with you there. Now, again, let's go back to our if we're going to use our example of making an offer. I think you can make an offer in social media, but again, most of the time my offers are going to be for engagement. You know, connect with me on Twitter or let's have a quick conversation or subscribe for, you know, a giveaway or getting some additional information from me that's no cost. So those kinds of things I think work better as building audiences and just building some traction. And it goes back to something you mentioned at the very beginning of the call, which is developing that sort of know, like, and trust. You know, I have
right.
people that have purchased from me and they feel like they know who I am because they've been reading, even though we've never met in person, you know, they've been reading some of my content and they've been, you know, getting my information. And they feel like they know a little bit about me now. They feel like, and they do actually, because I've been, you know, I'm very open and honest about what I talk about. And you know, I'm sure your audience is the same. So when they do finally make the decision to go ahead and purchase, there's already a connection that's been made. And social media, I think, does that better than anything. It's helped people to see who you are and how they can connect with you and develop that whole trust factor, which is really the number one thing. That's probably the biggest advantage in the sales confidence sort of equation, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to make. I mean, this has been my personal view that the less I sell on social media,
mm-hmm.
the more money I make from it because people,
right.
all things being equal, will do business with people they know, like, and trust. We all know that, and Bob Berg said that in The Go-Giver. So, you know, all things being equal, people do business with those they know, like, and trust. So,
yep.
It pains me when I see, when I go to social media pages and it feels like they can't comment on social media without selling. Let me give you an example. And unfortunately, I've run into this a couple times and I've seen people do this. And this is their idea of a birthday greeting. Now, the thing is, you know, if you're one of those folks who on Facebook who likes to say happy birthday to everybody, because, you know, happy birthday, you know, maybe, you know, just a way of getting on your radar screen, something like that. And
sure.
you can go to their profile when Facebook tells you it's their birthday and type, happy birthday, have a great year. That does not require a lot of effort. And the person's going to think, wow, I don't really know this person, but they still said happy birthday. Okay, and now your name is in their brain, so you've kind of done the job. So what I see, unfortunately, are some people who will go there and they'll say, hey, happy birthday, and I just wanted to give you a gift. Go to this link and opt in and get my three secrets to making your cat chase a wand toy. I'm thinking, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound salesy at all. And then the challenge is, if you're actually to confront people, they'll say, well, what do you mean? I was giving them a gift.
Well, yeah, and I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. And I can't imagine that even is working. You know, there are times when I see things on social media and, you know, I kind of want to email them and ask and be like, does this really even work? Because, I mean, I can't imagine that anybody's going to go, yes, this is just what I was waiting for, this sort of weird offer out of the blue. I don't even know who you are, but absolutely, you know, let me get my credit card out. Like, I mean, I just don't think that's real effective. I also, again, we'll go back to that comment about time and having, you know, we want to do what's most effective. I suppose if you do that maybe 100 times a day, that maybe somewhere along the line one person or a couple of people might click the link and move forward. You know, but I just don't think that's the most effective use of your time,
right,
or your resources either. So I think both of those things need to make sense, you know, as a strategy to be able to incorporate it into something you're going to do on a regular basis.
Seriously, I'm just thinking, every squirrel gets a nut. I mean, that's just the way it is. But if you are doing this 100 times and you're getting one out of 100, now, sometimes that is a good conversion rate, but come on, happy birthday, and hey, let's talk about my opt-in page. I don't know who trains these people. And then another thing that I see, and this is actual advice by a coach, and I heard this myself. If you have somebody on your Facebook friends list or your LinkedIn connection list or you're following on Twitter or something like that, if you make them an offer and they don't take you up on it, unfriend them, delete them, disconnect.
Oh gosh. I don't know if I definitely don't subscribe to that theory.
Right.
We'll kind of go back to my example of, you know, me walking up and down my street, right, and offering all of my neighbors and everybody in my neighborhood my services. You know, there might be one person in my neighborhood who's a small business owner who would go, "Oh yeah, you know what? I really could use your services." But again, you know, not the best use of my time. So one of the things, and with social media, you know, I have Facebook friends that people that know me from, you know, in high school, and people that know me from different places that I've lived or different volunteer organizations I've been part of. They're in, you know, they're not part of my businessy circle. And that's okay. I'm not going to unfriend them if they don't. That doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
What does make sense, though, and I think what makes the most sense, again, we talk about the simple thing, right, making the offer, and then it's finding and trying to, because let's face it, none of us like to be rejected. Even if I'm making an offer and I'm being as genuine as I can be, to be as helpful as I can be, and coming from the best place of intention possible, and all of those things are in alignment, you know, you still might not be interested, or you still might not be my best customer. But it's hard to do that. It's hard to put yourself out there in that way on a regular basis. So we want to make those offers in to an audience that's the most likely going to be receptive. Now, again, in many cases, one of those may be an email list, right? Because those are people who've said, yeah, they've opted in and said, I definitely want information from you, or I want to at least be eligible to get the information that you're sharing. So that's, you know, we want to increase the pool, or increase the odds of our offer being accepted. Does that make sense? So I tell people to be really strategic. It'd be better off to make the offer to 20 people who are likely or more likely to say yes, as opposed to 200 people and they're totally random and you have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when you're scientific about these things, it really helps you in terms of it's going to boost your confidence because you're going to get higher conversion rates.
That's right. Absolutely. And those people, even if they choose not to say yes today, those people may say yes to a secondary offer. Well, I'm not ready to buy, but I would go ahead and like to go ahead and get on your email list. You know, maybe I'm just not quite ready, or it's bad timing because I'm getting ready to go on vacation or whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of things happening in people's lives. The no, in many cases, isn't no, I don't want what you have. It just is no, I'm not ready to do it right now, or I don't know enough yet. So, you know, if we have a sort of a secondary offer saying, hey, if you're not ready to buy or join my program or sign up for the membership site, well, be sure you go ahead and get on my email list. This is where I share information, you know, that's really specific to the kinds of things you're looking for, and that way you won't miss anything. You know, now we've still made a nice engagement, and we still have this nice connection, and I don't feel like I've been rejected or turned down. I just feel like somebody wasn't quite ready to say yes, if that makes sense.
This is audio, and this is on the radio, but if this were video or television, you would have seen me raising my hands in the air and mouthing the word hallelujah when you said that, because what we tell people all the time is no means, in most cases, not right now. Now, that doesn't mean you insist, because when you insist, you lose. That doesn't matter whether you're selling, you're persuading, you're marketing, you're trying to find a boyfriend or
right.
a girlfriend or whatever. When somebody says no and you insist, you make it permanent. But if somebody says no and you respect that, no can mean not right now, because there could be a lot of things going on in a person's mind. And if you push them, that no can become permanent. Maybe we're in a conversation about something and I say no just because I'm worried about my cat who's at the vet, and I just can't process the idea of doing a deal right now. So not right now could change as soon as tomorrow.
Right, right. And we don't know. We don't know why someone says that. And I know this is hard. Again, when we're making an offer, you know, we want to do business with people and whatever that means. And in your case, and, you know, the individuals listening today, And know this is hard, but you really have to sort of be unattached to the results, so to speak. You know, it's not personal. And in many cases, again, it's just maybe they just don't know you very well, or maybe they need to check with a spouse, or maybe they don't have their credit card. I mean, whatever. Like, we don't know what their reasons are, and it's okay. Like, you don't need to know. I had a client not too long ago call me. And she's like, oh, you know, she had made an offer to a small group of people who had done business with her before. And several people took advantage of it, but a couple people didn't. And she was obsessing over why these two people didn't move forward with her. And I was like, you know what, it's really not, it's not your problem to solve. You know, I think you've given them the space to continue. And if they've chosen not to, you know, I would just give them a little space and then follow up with them in a couple of weeks. Well, sure enough, she followed up. And one of them, she was just on vacation and she was in a totally different place. And her, you know, she just wasn't in her business mindset. To your point, you know, sometimes people just need to be able to process information in their terms. And it's our job, again, as marketers, to give them the space to do that, but then to come back maybe at an appropriate time and make an offer again.
That's very true. And it's also fair to say that maybe the offer you're making right now is not the offer they need. Many times, no, sometimes no also means not right now, but let's keep talking.
Right, absolutely. And give people the chance to continue the dialogue, whether that's via your email list or attending, you know, if you have open office hours or you do conference calls with, you know, whatever your methodology is. Absolutely. I mean, let's face it. We think about a lot of times as a salesperson or a marketer of a small business, you know, we're really attached to everybody saying yes every time we make an offer. And
right.
I totally get that. However, think about it in terms of like retail or something, right? Like Macy's doesn't, you know, if you go into Macy's and you walk out one day and you don't buy anything, you know, they're not freaking out going, oh, she didn't buy anything today. Like, oh, she must have hated us and she didn't like what we showed her and I didn't say the right thing and all these doubts. No, they know, like, we're just going to be here and when she comes back, she'll buy something next time, right? So we need to just sort of take a little bit of that type of approach that, you know, just because it's a no today doesn't mean it's a no forever. My job is to keep doing over-delivering, so, you know, taking great care of my customers who did say yes, and, you know, continue to make offers in the future.
I'm not a big fan of Macy's for reasons that fall outside the aegis of the Business Creators Radio Show, but let me tell you this much. I've been aware of the existence of Macy's ever since I was but a young child. The next time that Macy's actually pressures me to do anything will be the first. And there's a reason they've been there since like the beginning of time. So we're about halfway through this, and what I hope our listeners are already gathering, not only from the comment I just made about how a business that doesn't pressure anybody has been there for centuries now. I think it's
right.
Like 175 years. I'd have to go back and look it up. This is one of those things.
Right, but a really long time.
Right, right. And when we hear these anecdotes and all these examples of how no can simply mean not right now, what I'd like to hopefully have people recognize is this is designed to help you build your sales confidence already. You may have come to this call thinking that you're going to get the 5 steps to building your sales confidence, and Phyllis may have a few things for us. We're going to find this out in the next few minutes. Maybe she does, maybe she doesn't. That's a mystery that remains to be solved. But what we want our listeners to get already is that there is no reason to freak out because somebody says no. In fact, that no could be leading to an even greater yes. I'm going to throw out a couple cliches. Maybe this one particular prospect tells you no, but that's okay, because since you didn't get them as a client, now you have room for this even better client that just showed up today that you didn't even see on your radar screen after you've been chasing this one. Also, don't get one-itis over one client. Did you not tell me just a story about somebody who was dealing with a small sample of prospects? What was that, like 10 people or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, and you said that they were obsessing to you as their coach because they didn't close 2 of the people.
Correct, right.
But they closed 8, right?
Right.
They closed 80%, 80% conversion rate, and they were worried the 2 people said no. The best I've ever done is 71%.
Right. Well, and so let's talk about this when it comes to the confidence, right?
Right.
If you don't mind, because I do think it's important to tell people, first of all, if you're listening and you're like, well, this all sounds great, but it sounds like, you know, you two have been doing this for a long time and you kind of get it. I'm not there yet, or I just have, you know, I struggle with this. And I totally get it. So let's talk about when it comes to being confident. The first thing that I want to recommend for everybody is just owning what you know. You know, being, if you have to write it down, if you have to make a, you know, get friends to help you with this, you know, your expertise and your experience and your capabilities are yours alone. And so it's a place for me and for many of my clients to draw some strength and some confidence. I'm not good at everything under the sun, but I'm really good, and all of you can do this too. You know, you're really good at, and be really honest with yourself about that. Sometimes we try and shy away from it. Just really, I call it owning it, you know, stepping up and owning it and saying, yeah, you know what, I am good at selling, and I'm good at doing this, and there's nothing wrong with saying that. The other thing I want people to understand is that being confident in that way is in no way about comparison. So I'm not saying I'm the best salesperson in the entire world of salespeople. I just try to do the best that I can do, and I feel good about the way that I do it. Do I continue to work at it and learn and everything? Sure, I do. Okay, it's not about comparing my skills with somebody else or ranking myself in any way. It's just being confident in who I am and what I know. I find that to be a point of real relief, right? Because I don't like comparing, first of all. And typically, if we're going to compare ourselves to others, we typically always put ourselves sort of on the short end of the stick. So,
right.
You know, and confidence isn't about that anyway. You know, some of the most successful people in the world will tell you, I just heard an interview with John Maxwell, and he's one of the most successful authors and speakers in the world. You know, he talks about the fact that he still has, you know, nerves, and he still gets nervous, and he still has, you know, a little bit of a, oh, you know, maybe this audience isn't going to like me this time kind of feeling. And, you know, if he has it as accomplished as he is, like, it's totally okay that, you know, we can all just stand in our presence and feel good about who we are and what we do. We don't have to compare ourselves to anybody else.
Another cliche is we go on social media and we see all these other people that are so much more successful than us. Well, we tend to give ourselves the short end of the stick is because we're comparing our backstory to somebody else's highlight reel.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really caution people about doing that, right? Just, you know, realize, again, the best thing, I hate to go back to this phrase again of owning it, but, you know, you can be happy for somebody else's I think you're right about the highlight reel. And also acknowledge, like, we don't know what went into that. You know, I just read a blog post the other day from somebody who was talking about their 10-year journey to overnight success. They've just recently sort of gotten some major publicity, and it sort of propelled them to now a lot of people know who they are. And he's like, you know, what they don't know is that, I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years. Many of those, you know, nobody knew anything about me, and, you know, I was in the trenches kind of daily doing what I had to do. And, you know, we don't always see that either with people who maybe have aspired that, or people who are two or three steps above us in their business. You know, we don't know what they've been through. We don't know the struggles that they've had unless they've chosen to share those. And we don't know that. So, yeah, to just, you know, you can be okay with where you are. Where you're at today is all that you can do anything about. So the best thing you can do is own what you know, and then, you know, take the next best step forward.
You know, and it is unfortunate. We have to learn how to see through this. I mean, we get these messages all the time. I'm remembering not even a year ago, I had been interviewed for somebody to be a guest on somebody's podcast. And then I met this person in person at an event where I was speaking. And the person said to me, and I asked him, asked this person just in conversation, I just wanted to check in, see how they're doing their podcast, because I hadn't heard that it had been launched yet. And they said, well, yeah, we're just getting ready to launch it, and I'll let you know when your episode is up. You have to understand, I have some you know, some people who are bigger than you, and I want to put their episodes first. And I said, what? What? I have relative value as a human being. And there are people bigger than me. Well, and I to teach this person a lesson, I said, well, tell you what, whenever you get around to me, just let me know, and I'll decide whether I have time to help you promote your podcast, and walked off. And they subsequently begged my forgiveness. But the point I was making is they were big according to who?
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I want our listeners
to hear.
I'm
totally
big
with him.
According to who?
Right.
I also know of somebody who had a situation where they were upset because their photo had been like their testimonial had been bumped down on somebody's page that they had given this person because and this was somebody who they had done so much for. I mean, they were giving a testimonial to somebody who they had done a ton of things for, and they were upset because they were bumped way down the bottom because this person had gotten another testimonial from some big name who had never done squat for them. And I told this person, you know, if you're upset with the person who bumped your testimonial down, because you're upset because you've done so much for this person, and they come in and they want to put your testimonial way at the bottom so they can put Joe's up at the top just because he allegedly has a bigger reach. If this
right.
is something that really matters to you, then go back to your person and say, so next time Joe has an urgent crisis, or next time you have an urgent crisis, why don't you call Joe and see what kind of help he'll give you? Again, big according to who.
Right, exactly.
I'm giving some extreme examples because I just want to nail this in. Big according to who. For some people, you are the world.
Exactly. And they're looking to you. The other thing about being confident, and I really want people listening to hear this, if this is something you struggle with.
Yes.
Is that You know, people really want to believe in you. They want to believe in you, and they want to believe in the products and services that you have. They really do. I'll use this analogy of, you know, like a doctor. You know, some people are like, oh, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging or anything like that. So I use this very obvious example of going to a doctor and you're sick or your child is sick, and you know, you don't want the doctor to be like, well, you know, I'm probably not the best doctor. I'm okay. I could probably help you. And, you know, right now, obviously, of course not, right? You want a physician who's going to be like, yeah, absolutely, I can help you. I'm going to make your, you know, I'm going to diagnose your child, and we're going to get this, take care of the problem and make everything better. And that's really what your audience wants from you. They want you to, they want to believe in you, they want to like you, and they want to believe in the products and services that you're offering them. And I think that, for me, was kind of a mind switch, because it takes the focus off of what am I, right? And it puts the sort of focus on what does my audience need and want to see from me. And I think, for me, that was really helpful. It's like, you know what, of course they want me to be confident about what I know. I'm also right up front, if somebody asks me something and I don't know about it, somebody asked me a question the other day about SEO and analytics, that's not my thing. You know, I mean, I understand the concepts, but I'm certainly not an expert at that. So I refer them to someone who is, and I'm totally fine doing that, because that's really not my skill set. So, you know, I think it's really great if you can let your audience know, here's what I'm great at and here's how I can help you. And just be, you know, the sincerity and with really good intention, again, that's not going to come across as boastful or arrogant or proud. They're going to be relieved. They're going to be like, oh, thank goodness, because I'm totally looking for somebody who can do this for me. I'm totally looking for someone who can answer these questions or solve this problem. And they want that from you.
There's a term out there called aspirational success, A-S-P-I-R-A-T-I-O-N-A-L, as in we aspire to it, aspirational success. And when they see you being successful, it gives them feelings of confidence. So they want to follow you because they want your success. So it is possible, and it's actually expected, that you're going to show them how you're successful.
Right, absolutely. And again, it's coming from that place of, again, being helpful and being knowledgeable and sort of saying, you know what, I don't know everything in the world, but I know this. So if you want to follow me, and we'll kind of get there together, or, you know, you can, you know, or I'll take you where you need to go or help you on your journey. I think that message really resonates with a lot of people, you know, and it really makes people feel comfortable that you've been in their place before and you know how to solve the problems and you know how to keep things moving forward. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're all looking for, whether it's about our health or, you know, raising kids or having a nice home and that sort of thing. We just want to know there's somebody who can answer my questions and who knows sort of where I'm coming from. And if you can tap into that for your audience, it's a win. Every time, your offers are going to be accepted readily and people are going to totally get it.
There's many reasons why people don't do it. And there's a phrase that we hear too often, especially in childhood. Who do you think you are?
Good point. Good point. So, and that's dealing with, you're talking about dealing with self-doubt or maybe feeling like I'm not as good as, who am I to be able to lead these people, or who am I to be helpful?
Yeah.
Is that where you're coming from?
That's where I'm going, because that message delivered in exactly those words or in similar words. So the moment, and this is why I say all the time on social media, stop using words that end in the letters IST. So if you are selective about who your friends are because you want to associate with the people who are going to best support you in your business and life goals, that makes you an elitist. If you express any form of love of yourself, you're a narcissist. If you have any sort of expectation that you get what you pay for, and if you pay for premium, you expect to go first class, well, now you're a classist. And when we put these labels on, and people are afraid of getting labels, so therefore that cuts right into their confidence.
Yeah, Yeah, that's interesting. I've kind of never thought about it like this.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that self-doubt, though, comes from, at least for me, I feel like sort of self-doubt or this imposter type syndrome comes from not that I'm not good enough, but I'm not I don't know. I think it's when we set a really unattainable expectation.
Okay.
Right, that I'm going to be like this. Again, you talked about aspirational, like trying
right.
to be, you know, somebody's going to start out and say, well, you know, I'm going to start off and I want to start off at, you know, the John Maxwell level of public speaking.
Sure.
Well, no, you're probably not, right? So, and so trying to, again, it gets into comparing, right? Because if we're feeling like we're not good enough, then that must mean that there's somebody out there who is, right? And we're comparing in some way. I think the answer for me is to usually go back and be really honest about, here's what I know, here's what I know that I'm good at, and here's how I know I can help people. And if you're not sure, then ask people. Ask a trusted friend or advisor. Ask somebody that you've worked with to help you kind of identify those things. Where can you be effective? Where have you already been effective? Where have you really made a difference in someone's life? In your business or what have you, whatever it is you're doing, and then, you know, really be honest with yourself about that. A lot of times we don't want to be honest about who we are and what we can offer to the world.
Yeah.
We feel like it has to be bigger than that, right? Because if it's just me, like, that's just not big enough. I'm not, you know, Oprah. Well, you know, Oprah wasn't always Oprah either. So, you know, she started where she started. And it's our job to just start where we are right now today.
And you know, I think there's two competing things. One, as I said before, all these labels and the who do you think you are, and if you stand up and you stand for something, you're suddenly something that ends in the letters IST. And I think
mm-hmm.
on the other hand, we get pressure to fake it till you make it, which does have its value. The best way I can explain this is through an anecdote is I know somebody who is a member of a business coaching program, and she does a special kind of coaching. It's sort of a heart-centered type business coaching, and she took her business model to the people in her mastermind. They immediately started with, oh, no, you can't be doing this. You have to triple your rates and only work with 5 people and build a coaching team and have your sub-coaches work with everybody. You can't pay you $10,000. She didn't want that. And I've gotten pressure that, you know, you need to build a big team and replicate yourself and all that. That has never worked for me.
Right.
So just because you get pressure to do something because that is how the success is being defined, that doesn't mean that's your success. It may not be in integrity with you, so that can cut into your confidence as well because you're not measuring up because you're being told by people who mean well that, you know, take these actions and you'll be successful. But that might be out of integrity with what you're looking to accomplish. And there may be another way that you can achieve the level of financial and other forms of success you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a terrific point. And, you know, for me, this goes back to I have a list of what I call my non-negotiables. Because I'm with you. I don't necessarily want to – I like the high-touch capability that I have with most of my clients.
Right.
And I don't want to pass them off to someone else. That's my choice, right? Because it limits how many people I can work with at any given time. But that's my choice, and I'm okay with that. But I do have some core non-negotiables, and
right.
I wrote those down kind of early on, and that's actually really helped me because it's important. You made the best point is that, you know, you have to do what's right for you and what's right for your success. Again, I could work with more people if I leverage things and I did things differently and I trained some other people to do some other things so that I don't have to do it all or whatever. But right now, that's not how I want to run it. So, and that's my choice. And again, it goes back to my non-negotiables, which is, you know, certain kinds of businesses I want to work with, the type of people I want to work with, and even some of the methodologies that I always want to follow. So I always want to have a personal relationship with people who are getting my one-to-one coaching. It's important to me to do that. Even in my group coaching, there's a level of one-to-one interaction. Those are my choices and that, because that's what's right for me. Somebody else may see it differently and may want to do it differently, and that's okay. You know, you can have your own non-negotiable. I don't work with certain types of businesses, you know, not because
right.
I don't like them or whatever. I'm not, there's certain types of businesses I don't think I can serve very well. So I'm just honest and upfront about that. It makes it easy for me. So if somebody approaches me or talks to me about that, I can, with very good confidence and self-assuredness, say, you know what, I'm not a good fit for you, but here's somebody who might be. And I can say that knowing I'm not going to get myself into something that I know I'm not going to be good at or in an industry that I don't want to be part of.
Yeah. And
those things have been really helpful.
Right. And you can see how that can cut into your sales confidence. Well, if my selling works out well and I end up with a prospect I don't want, what, I have to take them on? Well, here's a simple fact. Even if you have a prospect or an opportunity in front of you and it looks good on paper, and even if you have 10 things you're looking for in an ideal client and this opportunity, this client in front of you, you can check off 10 out of 10, but you're just not feeling it, you don't have to take it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And you can do what's, you know, you can – and there's, I guess, I think there's real power in that too. I'm sure you've done that in your career, and you've been able to say, you know what, I'm intentionally making this decision because I ultimately know it's in my best interest and it's in the other person's best interest as well, right? So now I'm not. Another example of this is when somebody asks me to do something that's outside, again, like where they're like, well, you're already doing this and this and this for me. Again, why don't you do the analytics part of stuff too? Well,
uh-huh.
No, that's not my thing, and you know. Early on in my career, I might have been eager to say yes because I don't want to ever disappoint anyone. But I learned that, you know, if I'm trying to do something that's really not my skill set, that I'm not very good at, first of all, it's going to frustrate me. And secondly, I'm not going to give them the best results, right? It just becomes a really bad thing. And I've tried this. So don't, you know, take my word for it. I don't want anybody to have this struggle. But I got into something I wasn't really good at, and I was having to get a lot of help. And I still wasn't meeting the customer's expectations. And it was because I said yes to something that I'm just really not that good at. And so I learned very early, like, it's okay. It's okay to say, here's my lane, and I'm going to stay in it. I'm going to own it. I'm going to love it. I'm going to run it. I'm going to just, you know, have a great time with this part. And if it comes out way outside of this, you know, I just have to say that's not my thing. Let's find somebody else that's going to be a good fit.
Right. One of the competing pressures we get is to be all things to all people. And if you're already doing one thing, why can't you do this other thing that the market serves?
Right.
Between the years of 2006 and 2010, I owned a web development firm. I am not a web designer. I know how to make a site convert, but I don't know about color swatches and all that. When I had the firm, I paid people who knew how to do that. And they actually taught me the fundamental understanding. But it took a different type of creativity to make that happen. I was an aggregator. And I bring this up, and I keep bringing this up because, you know, we have people in the Business Creators Institute who are web designers, who are web development firms, and I use my experience to help them leverage and grow their businesses in the way that serves them best.
Right.
We got a lot of business because info marketers would put out courses or they'd create coaching programs, and one of the components would be, oh, and we'll build you a website too. And what kept happening is they would keep bringing on web designers. I can think of one person, a previous client of ours, great guy. I'm not going to say his name, but fantastic guy, loving the pieces. And he had one of these types of programs. He said, oh, we'll build your website for you too. And he had three designers on board to help him with that. Well, let's see. In one day, one of the designers fired him, said, I'm not going to do this anymore. Another did something so catastrophic that they had to be fired. And then the third one just stopped answering emails. Just disappeared, just said, nope, I don't care, I'm not doing it anymore. That didn't even explain. So this guy got left holding a bag on 8 websites. Now he came to me asking if I could bail him out, and I said, well, we can help you with 3 of them. That's how much, you know, that's what the bandwidth we have right now. I can help you with 3 of them. And he said, well, you know, I've already lost a lot of money. And I said, well, unfortunately, you're going to lose some more money. Maybe next time you offer a program, don't throw in the done-for-you website and you won't have this problem. And he said, touche, and he paid our rates, we solved his problem. But that's a classic example right there of throwing in a service that is nowhere near your core just because it's, quote-unquote, logical that you would include this too.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily the case. So we have about four minutes here. And just real quickly, if you can answer two things for me. The first is, You know, what are just a few ways, if you were to give us a quick checklist, a few ways you can increase your confidence, not just when it comes to selling?
Okay, so absolutely, let's do that. So number one, and I've already mentioned this, but I want to mention it again, is just be really honest with yourself about what you know, what you're good at. The second thing is to give yourself the opportunity to demonstrate that, whether it's just in a conversation with a friend or a mentor or even to a customer, just have the ability to talk about a success and really kind of talk through it, how it happened and that sort of thing. I find we do better when we're explaining our processes and we're explaining how things happened as opposed to like, oh, I did this.
Right.
The other thing I think is really this might seem counterintuitive, but I find it to be really helpful, is giving yourself the experience of new opportunities or pushing yourself a little bit in a new way. So for me, with selling, one of the things that I'm doing right now is actually I'm learning a little bit about photography. It's way outside of my sales scope, but I like to have nice pictures on my blog. So it's a kind of a cool thing because it's teaching me some new things. It's teaching me how to relate to things, but it's also helpful for me to clarify, the things that I'm really good at, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And being able to learning a new skill. And I think that's the other thing to really acknowledge as well, is that, we're always learning. As I've been in sales for 20 something years and I've been very successful. However, I don't ever feel like I've arrived, and I certainly don't feel like I know it all, right? There's always this constant process of learning. And if you've been in the web design business, it changes constantly.
Yeah.
You have to just keep up with kind of what's happening and what's new. And I think that's really helpful too. And just saying, I'm really good at this part of my business, and I'm going to be a constant learner, not because I have to be, not because I don't know what I know, but because I know that this falls within the skill set of things I know I'm good at, and being able to learn even more about it is going to help my confidence. And that's good for anything, whether it's parenting or learning to play an instrument or learning a new language. I mean, just really exposing yourself to the opportunity to learn and sort of be better at things.
Yeah.
Feeling of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Right. And from that stems confidence, the feeling that you can accomplish things. So you want to build your sales confidence, in my personal opinion, going with everything you've said and the great tips you've given and everything we've spoken about over the past hour, is find ways to be successful, because success begets success. And you'll be a lot more confident out there selling it if you know you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a momentum that comes with that too, right? A momentum of just, sort of feeling good about those things. Absolutely. You're totally right.
Absolutely. And when you lose that momentum, you lose your confidence, conversely. So Phyllis Nichols, first of all, thank you so much for taking time with us here today. This has been fantastic. And I just want to turn over the